I'm practicing.
Practicing for what?
The prince.
Hiya, stop.
He's a liar and a coward, and he killed my friend.
SpecficMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast. With hosts PG Holyfield, Chooch, Viv, and Nukchus.
And welcome to episode 3 of Beyond the Wall. This is the Roundtable Podcast where we discuss all things Game of Thrones and George R. R. Martin. This is the day after episode 3 was aired on Sunday, the 1st of May, and we're going to get our general views of the episode, and then we'll get into a little more detail tonight. Oh, I am PG Holyfield, founder of SpecficMedia.com, and I am joined tonight by our regular crew, and with Christiana now added as regular crew. Everybody that heard the second episode, that was her test drive, and she added so much class to the episode. We had to level her up. Yes,
that's really what I was shooting for.
Ding,
badge acquired.
So,
along with 25% more Luna,
and along with Christiana, we have our regular, the rest of our regular cast, which of course is Nukchus and Chooch and Viv. How's everybody doing tonight?
Doing good.
Excellent. Yes.
Awesome. Well.
Not itchy, red, or bumpy.
Yeah, and no hives right now, so that's good.
Right on. Another level up.
Episode 3. Who wants to start? Who wants
to
start?
I think Nutty does.
Go, Nutty.
I always want to talk. What are you kidding? No. episode 3 was pretty freaking awesome. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I really actually enjoyed a bit of the added scenes that they put in there that weren't in the books.
Right.
There were quite a few things that were just really, really awesome. And we'll get into that when we go into details. But I hate to sound like a broken record, but every episode just keeps me smiling, happy and happy.
I mean, this is my favorite episode of the three. I mean, the first one, of course, you got to introduce all the characters that they had to introduce. The second one, I thought, you know, had some. Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's a building episode. They're trying to you know, laid some of the groundwork, and even though they had to introduce even, you know, 10, 12 new characters in this episode, you know, they just, the cutting was better, just the, you know, the transitions between scenes, and I mean, I just thought it was excellent from beginning to end. Even the Dothraki scenes didn't bother me like the other episodes they did sometimes. So,
well, there were definitely some things on this one that even, there are two things I can think of off the top of my head that even if I had hated every other minute, you know, the very last scene would have redeemed the entire episode. I mean, that alone made it my favorite episode.
Just so.
Tomorrow you will be here at midday.
Who are you?
Your dancing master, Cyrio Forel. Tomorrow you will catch it. Now pick it up.
Just yeah, something tells me we are going to spend at least 10 minutes talking about the last scene.
No, I think we'll be gushing.
Well, you know, I do have to, I agree with you, though, that scene was just so wonderful. I mean, you know, that whole sequence in the book, just everything to do with Cyrio and Arya learning the sword. I mean, and the scene just played it so wonderfully, and you just, I mean, so much of the show is so grim that, you know, seeing sort of the joy of that learning and just how he's like probably the best sword teacher ever, not just in terms of skill, but just being awesome and like fun and encouraging. Yeah. And it's all good. I liked it. Just
you smile. Didn't even care that he wasn't bald, right?
No.
I didn't even remember that. Was he supposed to be bald? I didn't remember that, I guess.
Yeah, he's supposed to be a bit older.
Yeah, he's definitely younger than he's portrayed in the book, but I didn't care.
No, exactly. No, he had it.
I love him.
I thought he was.
And
a
they did bring it back to the grim with Ned in the doorway. And
Well, you know, Ned can't walk into a room without turning everything grim.
Yeah, he's a downer.
He got a little smile on it.
And I thought Sirio was a mix of Inigo Montoya and the Hispanic kid from Welcome Back, Cotter.
Hey, Mr. Cotter, I got a note.
That was where I got that
one. Juan Epstein?
Yes, exactly. So that was what I got out of it. No.
I love the long stretch back that you did for that pop culture reference there.
Thank you. Thank you. I am old, so thank you.
Well, you know, we're the same age, so shut up.
So
Mr. Cotter.
Out of a sheer just random coincidence, I won't go in long into this because it's obviously not really on topic, but the PSN, the PlayStation Network, has been down, and so they've had a press conference about their Welcome Back program for when they get it up and running again. And I just, like, not 15 minutes ago, read a blog post where they made a Welcome Back Cotter joke about it.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
You know what this means? That we're on the verge of a reboot.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I hope not. It. Just replay the old episodes. They're just awesome.
Yes, they are. So, in the episode, of course, as far as the plot, we get we arrive at King's Landing. Got the great scene up front that's with Eddard coming into the throne room and meeting Jaime, and you know, Jaime starting to talk about when Eddard's brother is killed and father and.
Thank the gods you're here, Stark. About time we had some stern northern leadership. Glad to see you're protecting the throne.
Eddard with the great line, is that what you tell yourself at night when you,
yeah,
you know, go to sleep? I like that.
Zing. Well,
it's such a neat dynamic between those two in the sense that in a very real sense, Jaime feels like Ned should be thanking him.
Mm-hmm.
He does,
and,
yeah.
And you can see that there's a little bit of hurt feelings from him, just kind of like, I killed this king that you were already fighting a war against, mind you, and who horribly killed your father and brother, and I killed him so that your best friend could become king, and you treat me like I'm the asshole.
When I watched the Mad King die, I remembered him laughing as your father burned. It felt like justice.
Yeah, that's a good summary.
Well,
yeah.
And what I like about that scene and another scene in this episode is we're getting a bit of Jaime's side, whereas when you read the books, you don't get Jaime's point of view until, is it the second book?
At least the second book.
It's even
into three before we really
it's start. It might be even the third book. Cause...
And he keeps a lot of his feelings pretty close to the chest, even in his point of view chapters. So in this, we're actually getting a bit of Jaime's side of it. And you can totally see Ned's things like, well, okay, yeah, you rebelled when it was easy, but when I needed you to rebel, you didn't rebel. You could have stopped all of this. But Jaime's side is, yeah, there were 500 other people here. What good would it have done?
Yeah.
So, you know, it is very
interesting. But Ned's side also is like, gosh, you happened to change sides at exactly the right moment, didn't you? I wonder if you might do that again the next time it comes up.
Brands of armor. Not a scratch on it.
I know. People have been swinging at me for years. They always seem to miss.
Choosing your opponents wisely, then.
I have a knack for it.
Well, exactly. And you got to agree with Ned on that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Honor is everything, of course, to Eddard. And, it's a point that's sort of made throughout the books, just that you can be on the wrong side as long as you're honorable.
Right. As long as you're upfront about it.
Well, Ned doesn't give Barristan a hard time.
No.
No.
Absolutely not. So.
But I think Barristan in the book always shows honor and doesn't, you know, and it's like when they mention in the book how the Mad King, the last insane thing that he did was that when Tywin Lannister showed up with 12,000 of his army at the gate proclaiming to be there to help him and fight off the resistance.
Spoilers?
It's past
history.
It's past history.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine then.
I doubt that they're going to do a flashback of that, but you know, that the Lannisters deceived the Mad King, and that's how they got in, and that's how they killed him and took the throne. So, I mean,
in truth, if we're going to go back to that, in truth, the only deceptive reason why Jaime did kill the Mad King is his dad told him to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because it fit him. Mm-hmm. At Tywin at that time. But for those of you who haven't read the books, Tywin is a name you'll pay attention to once you meet him.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit like Lucius Malfoy.
Mm. In my head, he's always been played by Patrick Stewart, FYI. So it'll be very interesting to see how I react to the actor that's portraying him.
Have they cast Tywin?
He looks good. I mean, I've seen him in other stuff. He's a great actor. So
okay. For listeners, Tywin is Tyrion, Cersei, and Jaime's father.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and they've mentioned his name. And I had a quick question, and I don't think that it's any kind of spoiler thing, since it is this past history. So Tywin was the hand of the king.
The Mad King.
Mm-hmm. The Mad King. Who was a Targaryen.
Mm-hmm.
And Jaime killed the king. How does that make Robert Baratheon king?
Well, it was and Ned and their associated armies who were basically attacking King's Landing to begin with. So they basically seized the throne.
I don't think Tywin ever wanted the crown, though.
Right. Well, yeah.
Robert the Usurper.
Minor spoilers.
Right. I just don't understand how that.
Basically, what happened is that the Lannisters switched sides. You could call it the last minute. So. Mm-hmm. Robert and Ned and their armies were attacking, and the Lannisters were ostensibly on the side of the Targaryens, but then all of a sudden they said, hey, you know what? Robert, it's yours. Take it. We're good.
Yeah.
Kill the guy for you, so you don't even have to do it yourself. So how about that?
So there's not really a bloodline unless you read at the end of the book, the kind of family histories, you know, the whole family tree thing, where it says that there was a Targaryen in the Baratheon family tree, you know, centuries ago, but that's why he was called Robert the Usurper, because he didn't have a right to the throne. They ousted the quote rightful king because he was, you know, so crazy. Yeah. At least that's my take on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, even if we talk about the politically convenient timing for the Lannisters to switch, you know, Jaime also has a point of what was the last thing he said? The same thing he'd been saying for days. Burn them all.
Yeah.
There was also laughing involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're kind of glad this guy is dead, remember?
Well, absolutely.
And it wasn't
like a Hitler.
Soldiers he was burning, so yeah.
Yeah.
And that's my other thing that I love that they added that scene. Like when I first was watching that scene, and I know we're jumping ahead, but when I'm first watching that scene where Robert and Ser Barristan the Bold are talking about their first kills, which at first you think they're talking about their first women. And I'm sitting there going, damn it, Robert, you're being a dick, right?
Jaime Lannister, son of the mighty Tywin. Forced to mind the door while your king eats and drinks and shits and fucks.
But then when Jaime tells his story and when he says what were the last words of the Mad King, and Jaime's like, let them all burn. Yeah. I just feel like that showed so much of Jaime's character. And it shows that, yeah, he's got a bit of honor and he is a bit conflicted. And that's also something that we don't find out until like book 3 or 4.
Right.
So it's very interesting.
He's not really, Jaime's really not given any depth or layers or levels or any kind of, you don't really get any of his motivations until much later in the series. So I'm actually glad that they're giving a peek at that, because the only thing we know about him, he killed the last guy he was supposed to be protecting, and he bangs his sister.
Yeah.
Pushes a little kid out a window. So it's like, what are his motivations? You know, there's got to be more to him. And if you didn't stick with the series, you still don't get it. But now they're kind of bringing that in really early with this TV show, which I'm actually glad for, because
on that same note, it's like the scene we got with Jaime and Cersei this time, where, you know, we see a little bit, you know, almost from Jaime's perspective of how Cersei is kind of unstable and crazy. So like, it's again, it's a bit like him trying to justify killing the king to Ned when he's feeling like, shouldn't you be, thanking me? Right. And so now that, Bran is awake, they get that news. All of a sudden, Cersei is saying, what were you thinking? And he's like,
he was 10 years old.
He was like, oh, he saw us. What was I supposed to do? I was just like, you're worried about him talking now. What he would have talked then. And so he's, but at the same time, we get the sense he's been putting up with this kind of stuff from her for a long time.
And from others. I mean, obviously, wasn't he like 17 when he killed the Mad King?
Yeah.
Wasn't he just like a teenager? So, it's like his whole life he's had this skill with the sword and he's always been the one to do the dirty work and then have to. Well, it's like this scene with Cersei and Joffrey where she says, you're going to be the king. Whatever you say happened is what happened. History will be rewritten to what you want it to be. And it's kind of like that's what Jaime kind of deals with when he, handles this nastiness for other people, that it gets rewritten and he gets cast as the villain, even though he's just doing what he was told.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we meet some of the council around that time. We got Lord Varys and...
I love Varys.
Varys and...
not what I pictured, but... perfect.
Hmm.
It's like
that's one pretty of much exactly what I thought. Picture, yeah.
I thought he looked
well. I pictured the lisp more.
You are the king's hand, Lord Stark. We serve at your pleasure.
I pictured him to be. I actually pictured like powder falling off of him because they always talked about how he smelled of powder and all this other stuff.
Well,
but
yeah.
The way that he's portrayed in the series, the way that the actor does it, it's just perfect. And it's one of those things where, like, sometimes I picture something differently in a book, and then somebody starts playing it on the screen, and it just flips, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was saying in an earlier recording that we did, was that, in my mind, I pictured it very opulent, very sparkly, very bright.
Yeah.
But it's not realistic to the times, so what they're showing is actually... a more correct version of what it should be rather than what I imagined it. So, yeah, but I mean, other than, the powder thing being something that you could like tangibly notice in the scene, I thought he was spot on for the way I imagined him. Mm-hmm. And we finally got to see Lord Renly.
And we got to see Lord Renly. I actually had that written down because,
although
he gets go ahead.
I feel like if you didn't know the books, you would have to be really paying close attention to catch that Renly is Robert's brother.
Right.
Well, you'd have to be really paying close attention to catch that Renly's even there, because if you notice, we get lots of close-ups on Peter. We get lots of close-ups on Varys. We get some on Pycelle, very few on Renly. It's actually, he's not really on screen that much. And if he is, he's to the side or to the background, which I just thought was really interesting.
He did say my brother a couple times.
Yeah.
My brother won't be here. And
my
brother wants to have a joust.
Well, and to be fair, at this point, all Renly is there for is every once in a while he makes an insult towards Joffrey. And then every once in a while he laughs at something. He laughs at, Peter or whatever. And he's more like comic relief and just letting us know that Robert has two brothers, that we've only talked about one so far. Mm-hmm. And it's later. Is it book two that Renly becomes more, important?
Book one.
So just having
book one,
him
he
dancing.
Becomes important.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we can't really go into that without spoilers.
Right.
But
so right now it kind of makes sense that he's in the background because he's not like relevant to what's happening with Bran and all that.
Well, I totally understand that. It's just there's certain characters that seem to be missing. Rickon, Tommen. Renly's even in the scene and it's like, he's not really there. And I know that that's something that happens on television shows. I'm not upset about it. I'm just laughing about it.
And the thing is, too, it's like at this part of the books, he's not really there either. I mean, he said a couple of things, but he's not really he hadn't been established as a significant character. I mean, there's 150 different characters who'd have had speaking parts in the books by this point, and he's just one of them.
By the way, I wanted to alert everyone, Grandmaster Pycelle, that is Roy Dotrice, who did the audiobooks and got the Guinness Book World Record for most characters.
Right,
And
very cool.
I actually found out that he and Martin worked together on Beauty and the Beast, too. which I thought was kind of interesting. But I thought he did a very good job, although he seemed a little weaker than I imagined Picel. But I think I'm imagining Picel from the later books, because I think he's accurate for the first book. A lot of characters change.
Well, he's an old fart, so I don't know. Yes. I remember that. That's really all I remember about him, is, you know, that he's just really old.
He got his beard right, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, what do you think of Sir Roderick's beard?
I didn't like it at all.
I know.
Because,
I thought that the reason why they did side beard is because of the scene on the boat, but then they didn't do the scene on the boat, they completely skipped the beard.
Yeah, okay. Completely skipped the boat, you know, so they didn't to have the
I think the whole he thing has about, to look you know. Different. They can't have too many guys with these, you know, big gray beards, because otherwise people need to be able to tell them apart.
And let me break for a second and say that Sir Roderick is the guy that accompanies Catelyn to King's Landing, for those that may not remember. And it was
the Winterfell Master at Arms.
Yes.
So that's, the guy with the rubber, like the Lou Ferrigno. Not Lou Ferrigno, Lou Albano, Cyndi Lauper's manager with the rubber bands and his beard and stuff, kind of thing going on. The side part. No, I guess the center part on the beard. I don't know what that was. But yeah.
I loved Peter Baelish, Littlefinger. Mm-hmm. I'm loving the adaptation of him.
Yeah, I love how it's like he never has sort of an obvious negative reaction, but instead what his character does is like there's smiling, charming, and then there's poker face, and the poker face is what shows up when it's kind of Catelyn's saying to Ned, it's like he's like a little brother to me. We cut over to him, and he's just blank.
A little brother like Jaime and Cersei.
I understand you knew my brother Brandon as well.
All too well. I still carry a token of his esteem, from navel to collarbone.
Perhaps you chose the wrong man to duel with.
Oh, yeah, a little brother who fought for hand of Catelyn and lost.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I think this is the first time that they mention, or at least allude a little bit to Cat and Ned's history. Which, for those who haven't read the books, I don't think this is a spoiler, but basically, Cat was supposed to marry Ned's older brother, Brendan, and he and his father were killed by the Mad King. And so Ned, of course, doing the honorable thing, as Ned always does, stepped up and married Cat in his place. And this was after Brendan had fought Littlefinger for her hand. So.
Right.
And left him a token.
Oh, yes.
I did like in the council scene, I did like Eddard's unease.
Mm-hmm. Well, and his shock, that whole too, it just kind of like, his discovering this, like,
you're telling me there's
3 million in debt? It's like, no, I'm telling you, we're 6 million in debt.
You're telling me the crown is 3 million in debt?
I'm telling you the crown is 6 million in debt.
How could he let this happen?
They don't mention that the Mad King left the monarchy or whatever, left the bank full of money. I mean, being in debt is not a normal thing in Westeros. Yeah. The king's coffers are full and overflowing. And so it's more than just the fact that they're 6 million in debt. It's that Robert spent in how many years? What, 17 years? He spent all the money that was in the bank and 6 million. So,
I think we find out later in the books where some of the riches went. I don't know if it's a spoiler or not.
Yes, but.
But that wasn't purely his hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's part and parcel with Robert not being interested in paying attention to finances at all. Yeah.
Not even.
So not only does he spend too much, but he's also not paying attention if there's not quite as much as there ought to be.
Right. Well, it's like the scene where, you know, they're having that little trial for Arya and the direwolves in the last episode, where he just couldn't be bothered with, you know, the minutia. He wants to eat and drink and smash things and...
And fuck.
And fuck. Yes.
Painted whores.
Of course, we got the great line about the king shits and the hand wipes.
That's not... I was kind of disappointed because they changed that line, and I think it's better in the book. In the book, it's actually... the king says, you know, the saying about the king and the hand, and Ned says, what the king dreams, the hand builds. And the yes. king says, well, actually, if you ask the commoners, they'll say the king eats and the hand takes the shit. So it's a little different, but I think it I don't know.
Wiping I don't know. Poop? I think this one's better, actually. Well, it's still vulgar, but it's just it's simpler. I feel like the other one, it takes too long to get it all out. And it's just like, I think this expresses what they're trying to get across better, honestly.
Ew.
Well, I'm not saying it's a pleasant thought. It's not a pleasant thought in yours either. So there.
No. But having been a mom that has wiped butts, ew. Someone else's butt is not. So I guess you're right. I guess that portrays it. All right. I give that point, that poopy point to you, Christiana.
Okay. Moving on topic.
Moving on.
This is yours, Christiana.
Back to Winterfell. I liked the scene with old Nan telling stories. Mm-hmm. I thought she might tell a story of a three-eyed crow to sort of get that into the... the story.
I did like how they tossed off that whole "don't listen to that crow, all crows are liars." Yeah,
don't listen to it. Crows are all liars.
I like that. Right. I like that a lot. Also, I don't know if you guys noticed, but she's like, "Shall I tell you one of the stories of Sir Duncan the Tall?" And I absolutely squeed. Sir Duncan the Tall is the hedge knight from the comic mm-hmm. books that came out that George R. R. Martin wrote. For it, and it takes place in the past, and they're really good. If you've only read the first book or if you're only watching the first show, you can read them without spoiling yourself for the rest. So I highly recommend going out and getting them. There's two Hedge Knights at the moment, and they're a lot of fun, and I totally fangirl squeed when she mentioned it.
Probably my favorite line of the episode is when Bran says, "Oh, I hate your stories," and she just says, because she has a story for everything. She says, "Oh, I know a story about a boy who hated stories."
I hate your stories. I know a story about a boy who hated stories.
Oh, it's so good. And now the actress who plays old Nan, she passed away after filming, and this episode was dedicated to her, which I think is really sweet. Yep. But I think she did a fantastic job. Fantastic.
Agreed. I'm really starting to like Rob. I mean, just the actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, he hasn't had a whole lot to do, but just the scene with Bran.
One time she told me, "The sky is blue because we live inside the eye of a blue-eyed giant named Macumba."
Maybe we do.
The scene with Bran and their...
That was very touching.
Yeah, and he's saying, "Oh, I wish I was dead." And, he's like, "No. Don't say that." And then Bran says it louder. "I wish I would die."
See, that's the thing, too, is that, Rob, as much as he means well there, he really just doesn't have a response to that, because in some ways we can imagine that he would feel the same.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Especially so in that kind of world.
That's why
he doesn't want to lose his brother.
Well, I know. No. He doesn't want Bran to be dead, but he can't think of how to convince Bran otherwise, because he knows that that's how he would feel too.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially with how active he was.
Yeah.
Climbing and everything.
Yeah.
Now I thought that was an added scene for those of you who haven't read the books. That was added in the interaction between Rob and Bran. And I just think that it conveyed their relationship so much. And I was wondering how they were going to be able to do that, because we've got so many Stark siblings. How are we going to be able to convey some special relationships without inner monologue? And I thought that was fantastically done. And I just feel like the actor who played Rob, it spoke volumes in his eyes. He looked like he was looking down on his little brother and he's like, "No, I don't want to lose you."
Well, and I would even read more into that and say, if you look at the difference between that scene and the scene with Jon and Arya, that you can see that to Rob, that he loves his brother, but I don't think that he really knows him well enough to be able to know what to say to console him. And if it had been Jon and Arya, Jon would have known exactly what to say to Arya to console her. So I think it conveys the love that he has for him, but kind of also like that, "I love you, bro." I don't know what to say, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's just part realistic. Of being the oldest. It's part of being the eldest son, yeah. The one that's going to be Lord someday.
Yeah. Coming from somebody with many siblings, that's very realistic. Mm-hmm. There are certain siblings that you're going to be closer to and be able to get. And then there are other siblings that it's like you want to tell them, I care a lot about you, but you don't know how to do it because you aren't on the same wavelength.
So we go back to King's Landing, and I do have to say one thing. I think Catelyn looks better in this episode. She looked prettier for some reason.
I think that they made her more worn out looking last episode, because I remember thinking last episode, grieving. My God, she looks so haggard.
Yeah.
But that's what she would look like.
Haggard? I mean, haggard.
She looked like Hagrid. No, she didn't look that bad. I'm sorry.
Haggard. She looks so haggard.
4 feet.
Mm-hmm. Weird.
But even, you know, with the the premiere episode, I don't know. Anyway, I just thought she looked nicer.
She wasn't hot.
She wasn't hot enough.
She poked her head out of the brothel and she's like, Ned!
Yes, that was great.
Cutest Catelyn scene.
And Jay, and he just looks up and he's just like, hey, you're really here!
At the brothel. My dream come... Wait, hold on. Oh, wait, I'm on.
one of the other great lines, or my favorite lines, was Peter saying, well, this is a historic day. Something Varys doesn't know that I do, when they're looking at the dagger.
Well, this is an historic day. Something you don't know that I do. There's only one dagger like this in all of the Seven Kingdoms. It's mine.
And then you had the great cut from Peter saying, you know, the dagger was Tyrion Lannister, the imp, had it, and then they cut to Tyrion at Castle Black.
Right.
I just thought that was a great segue.
The other thing that's great about that scene, I think, is that even though we met Varys for the first time in the council scene, this is the one where they establish him as the guy who kind of creepily knows everything.
Right.
Because, you know, we saw how, you know, Catelyn Roderick were making this big play of, you know, coming into town in secret when no one knew they were coming. And she's like talking about how, you know, it's like, you know, I was here once 17 years ago and people didn't know me then. How would anyone recognize me now? And then two guards just roll up as like, yes, Lady Catelyn or Lady Stark. You know, it's weird. Or we've been instructed to bring you with us.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when he's there, he's like, oh, you know, it's like, you know, it's a pleasure to see you again. Your poor hands. And, you know, where's the dagger? Did you bring it? And there's just this look of like, what? How does he know of this stuff?
You know what else I liked? I liked the pure revulsion Kat had on her face when he tried to touch her hands and how she ripped him out of his hands. Yeah. I thought that was really good because in the books you get a stronger idea of how everyone really looks down on Varys. Like, Varys is a member of the council, but he's a eunuch. He's creepy. He's secretive.
It's less to do with the eunuch and more to do with the fact that they just can't trust him because he knows everything about everybody.
Well, right. Yeah, it's like no one quite understands how he gets all his information. And so there's just this something immediately suspect about him, just no matter what he's doing. Even if he's just standing there smiling, you think, what is he really smiling about?
Yeah.
What's he thinking about?
Does he know about that thing I did with that person? Oh, my.
Yeah. Varys is one of my favorite characters, incidentally.
Oh, he's a great character.
Yeah.
I love when he's
no spoilers, but some of the stuff he gets up to later. Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So concentrating a little bit on Castle Black and the wall. Get to see some good sword play with John and that whole... I like how they played that all out. A little bit different than the book, but just, you know, sort of Tyrion sort of teaching John that, you know, if you're going to survive out here, you better, you know, understand what's really going on and the people around you. And
I thought it was a good choice to give that bit to Tyrion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it worked fine for me, and I guess they didn't want to spend unnecessary screen time on it. I was just surprised that they sort of, they brushed past that lesson and had John kind of figure out what he was talking about a bit faster than in the book, where I think in the book he needed a bit more convincing to understand this whole bit of, it's like, you're really a lot better at swordplay than they are. Good thing you had someone to teach you from when you were very small, whereas they've never held a sword before. Yeah. So feel good about being so talented now.
Yeah. I mean, they really did expedite that whole thing. But I think you're right. I think it was well done.
Mm-hmm. I like how they did it. I thought it was interesting keeping Benjen there and having that scene with Benjen, because in the books he's gone by the time John gets to the wall.
There's a scene, because there's a scene between him and Benjen where Benjen says, "No, you can't come with me because you have to earn the right." I mean, that's pretty much straight
from I remember that too.
Where specifically, you're no ranger. You know, you don't get to be a ranger just because you come in here and you think you're important.
Yeah, and the fact that he kind of learns that yes, I'm his nephew, but that doesn't make me special here, because here I'm his brother along with all of these other brothers.
Yeah, and I think they changed a little bit, having them on top of the wall so they could have that nice scene over the over the trees and the mountains and all that stuff, which was cool. Yeah.
Tyrion's nice scene.
Yeah,
he got to piss off the wall. I was so happy. And just, I mean, I'm just gonna say it every week. He's just the best actor on the show, and you see everything through his eyes. I mean, Tyrion's talking to Yoren, and then Benjen comes in, and just watching his eyes go back and forth between the two, and just, you can see.
And how do a bear's balls taste?
Bit chewy. What about you, my lord? What's the strangest thing you've eaten?
Do Dornish girls count?
You know, everything he's thinking and feeling through his eyes, and I'm so impressed with him.
Yeah, that was a really great conversation. Imparted kind of some of the relationships and
just another great one-liner from Tyrion, in terms of, like, are we just an army of jesters to you? And he's like, well, you don't have enough people to be an army, and except for him, you're not particularly funny.
Yeah.
And I also like I'm probably jumping ahead, but I also really liked when Benjen goes into his whole speech to Tyrion as to why he doesn't like him, and he uses the word plump lordling in the beginning of it, and he goes through this whole diatribe, and at the end Tyrion goes, do you think I'm plump?
And they do it so plump little lords like you can enjoy their summer afternoons in peace and comfort. Do you think I'm plump?
Yeah.
It's so Tyrion to just respond with a witty retort. And I love that.
And what were you going to say, Chooch?
Well, the beginning of the conversation with the line with Tyrion starts saying, how he has this great admiration for you. And then when Benjen jumps in, my brother's fond of saying, you can ignore everything before the butt.
Yeah.
And of course you had the, what's the strangest thing you've eaten?
Oh,
yeah.
Do you count Donish girls?
Did anybody else catch the look of almost... it was like surprise / suspicion on Tyrion's face when Jon said that he was sad to see him go.
Yeah. I mean, I think
he didn't expect anyone to actually miss him, let alone a Stark.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the great things about his character, is that, he sees the truth of people, and, that's why he likes Jon and Bran. I mean, just that he,
He
connects with them, and even though I think John took it to heart when he was talking to him about, you're a bastard, I'm the freak, and we have something in common.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he sees him as the only person that's been really honest with him so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He says that pretty much explicitly, in terms of, it's like, nobody told me the truth about what this would be like except for you.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, Tyrion's almost giving, playing the devil's advocate again, of just helping Jon to see. It's like, okay, you were wrong to assume that everybody here was just going to be, noble people who want to save the world. But just because these people, you know, are commoners who have frequently been forced to come, that does not mean that they are not worthy of your respect.
Right. Yeah, and that doesn't mean that they're not noble just because they don't have a title. Did we talk about Maester Aemon, by the way, real quick?
We didn't yet, but we can.
Okay.
Now.
Well, sorry, I'm jumping around. Crazy head. The other thing I wanted to say about the whole Tyrion-Jon exchange is they never actually shook their hands and said they were friends. And Jon never asked Tyrion to help Bran, which I kind of was waiting for him to do. But whatever. Maester Aemon, very excited, very cool. Did his eyes look whited out? I don't think that they did. But
he kind of stared.
Yeah, they made him
face, but
yeah. They made him look blonde, but not like the, you know.
Yeah.
I just squeed because I was very excited and I can't wait to see more from him.
Yep.
So. And the old bear. Go ahead.
Saw that the actor saw that Danny didn't have to wear contacts, so he said he didn't have to either.
I don't need to be all white now.
Hey, she doesn't have to.
I liked the old bear also. He was as tall big as I pictured, but I also pictured him being a bit further out in the tummy, which he wasn't. but he definitely looked very cool, and I like the way that he carried himself.
Yeah, he'll have a lot to do in the future. Yeah. He'll be fun to watch.
Yeah. Just those are two of my favorite smaller characters. So I was excited.
Let's jump out over to Dothraki land, because we didn't have as much of them in this episode, I don't think, time-wise. But
we got to see Viserys get beat up.
Now,
whip choke.
And that's probably one of the only scenes that just, it sort of bothered me. You know, again, you can't nitpick about much with this episode, I don't think, but just, and even in the book, just the idea that Viserys just goes so crazy because they stop moving, and I understand his logic of, you know, nobody gives me orders, but it just didn't come across. It's like, okay, why is this guy freaking out and jumping through there to attack his sister?
He hasn't had enough opportunity to beat up on his sister and
yeah,
put her nipples.
And yeah, that's true.
And he's like, dude, I'm feeling left out. I gotta go smack a bitch, and oh crap, this guy doesn't want me to do it.
Yeah,
I kind of agree with PG, is that it seems to have come out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you've read the book,
it's one thing, but just as a viewer, not. You know, exactly. You understand that Viserys is a jerk from the beginning, but just the sequence of events where they're going, Danny sees, I'm assuming that's Jogo, hitting the slave or the guy on the side of the road, and she just sort of says, hey, let's stop, and, you know, she goes off, and then 10 seconds later, he's rushing through saying, what are you doing giving me orders? And it's like, I just didn't really feel right as far as, you know, just the sequence of events. And I could see that showing or giving some confusion to people that hadn't read the book.
See, the only thing that I felt like I might agree with you on is just in the sense that there didn't seem to be much of a connect between, oh, he's beating the slave, so I need to go walk in the tall grass for a little bit. That seemed disconnected.
I mean
in the book it was more that she wanted to walk because she'd been riding for so long, and she wanted to feel the ground between her toes, the dirt between her toes, and blah
but
blah
with
blah.
With Viserys, I thought that was it seemed, first of all, I think it's supposed to seem out of nowhere. It's supposed to, I mean, that's his whole deal, is that he's bipolar or something. The point is, I think it's not so much like, oh, you're giving me orders, even though that's obviously what he said. It was more just a matter of like, you know, I'm here because we're traveling, we're gonna go get my crown, so what do you think you have even any authority to give orders of any kind? What the hell you think you're doing?
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, he's going from everybody calling him king, you know, at Illyrio's palace, or manse, or whatever they call it, to everyone starting to call his sister the little grubby nothing that nobody ever cared about. They're calling her Khaleesi. What is wrong with my pronunciation tonight? They're calling her Khaleesi, and treating her like royalty and not really giving him any respect. And so he just kind of goes nuts. And I think that that's kind of pretty true to Viserys' character, because honestly, I don't think he's as crazy or violent in the series as he was in the books. I think he was a lot more crazy and violent in the books. Just my opinion.
Well, yeah, you definitely get a lot more of his insanity in the books, which is why I kind of agreed with PG, is that, you know, you get a couple, like maybe we've had 3 or 4 scenes with him so far. And so they're doing their best to portray his being so unstable in the few scenes that he has. But he's also, if you look at the grand scheme of the book, he's really not that big of a player.
You walk.
Well, oh, wait, is that a spoiler?
Yes.
Feel free to pop that out.
But, I mean, this is obviously kind of switching over to another scene, but the scene with, you know, Robert telling, you know, war stories and, you know, that whole scene, while I didn't dislike anything specific that happened in it, it felt just kind of like dropped in out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And not even just a matter of like, oh, I don't want to have scenes that weren't in the book, because I don't have a problem with that. But that one just felt like, I felt like we needed just a little bit more to get us into that scene of, okay, so Robert's just kind of sitting there. Clearly he's had something to drink and he's feeling grumpy, and because he doesn't especially like being a king. But I felt like we just needed a little bit more to transition us into what's going on there. Yeah, and maybe they just didn't want to spoil the whole, you know, are they talking about their first woman or their first kill? They didn't want to spoil that, maybe.
I felt like, I remember thinking while I was watching the scene, dude, if you're bored and grumpy, go to the council meeting, you know? Like, it just seemed like he was bored and had nothing to do. Meanwhile, there were things he could have been doing. But
well, I think that occurred while they were still on the road, before they got to the castle, before they got to King's Landing.
No, because Ned arriving at King's Landing is the very first thing that happened in the episode.
They must be thinking of the book or something. I don't know. Never mind.
Well, that scene with the king talking to the hunting or the war stories was
inside the castle.
Yeah, it was my first real more buying him as the king.
Yeah.
Well,
I
liked the scene in general. I just felt, again, like it felt shoehorned in. I felt like I wanted a little bit more setup for the scene.
Yeah.
Is all. And but like once we're in it, I thought all of the characters behaved as I would have expected. And of course, we needed to introduce Lancel at some point.
Oh, poor Lancel.
And Barristan, so.
I have to say that when I watched that scene the entire time I was watching it, I just didn't see why it was there. And then when Jaime came in, the scene made sense to me. Mm-hmm. But that was me.
And I think it pairs with the council scene where obviously he's not there, but we sort of learn what kind of a king he's been.
Yeah.
In addition to just the personal stuff, but now we also just sort of see how, you know, Robert doesn't even especially like being king. I mean, he liked the war part.
He hates it.
And so he's just sort of found like, this is being king. This sucks. And you know, as far as like he's bored, he could have gone to the council meeting. I felt like. Like this was like this is what he does to get out of the council meeting, is he sulks in his chamber,
mm-hmm. and drinks all the wine.
Yeah,
goes to the brothel.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about the other? Well, it's not really an added scene, but it was definitely a change scene. The whole dinner, lunch, breakfast, whatever scene that was with Arya stabbing the table, and Ned bringing Sansa a doll. One of my favorite lines coming from this scene is where he says, "War is easier than daughters."
Eight.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm glad I have sons.
Yeah, I mean, I think throughout the episode, they did a really good job of just showing how out of place Eddard is.
Yeah.
Whether it's because his wife's not there and he has to deal with the daughters himself, or, you know, being on the council and being sort of out of place.
I was grievously sorry to hear of your troubles on the King's Road. We are all praying for Prince Joffrey's full recovery.
Shame you didn't say a prayer for the butcher's son.
Yeah, well, just everything in there.
That's kind of one of the defining traits of Ned's character, I think, mm-hmm. is he's just half step out of phase no matter where he goes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
He exists in a slightly shifted universe from the rest of the story. And so that's the cause of many of his problems, is that he doesn't ever quite get it. He always mostly understands, but never quite is able to make the right call in many situations.
He doesn't right. figure anything out properly until after the fact.
He just expects everybody to act as honorably as yes. he expects himself to mm-hmm. act, and he doesn't really see the machinations of what everybody's doing around him.
Yeah, I was
too late.
I was talking to Mike about it, an old friend of mine, and he has been watching the show but hasn't read the books. And what I was saying about his character Ned is just that he is honorable to the point where reasonable, good, moral people are kind of wanting to pull him aside and go, come on, really?
Yeah. It's like that episode of, I don't know if any of you guys watch How I Met Your Mother, the Oh Honey girl. Oh, honey. Because they just can't believe how naive she was.
Yeah.
So he's a paladin.
Yes, yes. Actually, I believe that Ned is a paladin. 100%.
Although he worships the old gods, does that
a paladin can follow different churches. As a matter of fact, there are different churches that paladins follow in D&D, so that works.
I would agree then if there's not a religious restriction.
So we have we can jump back, but we might as well spend a little more time with one of, it sounds like everybody's favorite characters, which is Cereo Pharrell.
Tomorrow you will be here at midday.
Who are you?
Your dancing master, Cereo Pharrell. Tomorrow you will catch it. Now pick it up.
Yeah. One thing I noticed about that scene is that you could tell right away that they filmed that scene a lot later than the first episode, like the premiere, because Arya looks older.
She does.
You know, she's taller, thinner, you know, than she was.
She looks great in pants.
Yeah. But just the whole, I mean, that was just the, you know, choreography and just, you know, everything was just spot mm-hmm. on. And you know, Ned walks in and he starts, you know, hearing the metal on metal instead of yeah, the wood. Yeah. And it was
I love that
awesome.
Transition.
Yes.
That was such this joyous scene of like, oh, this is just wonderful. And we're happy with a big smile on his face. And even Ned's happy there saying, oh, like this was good. But then as they're actually practicing, we start hearing the swords to sort of indicate him realizing
that was,
oh,
awesome.
Wait, you know, if she has to actually use this, I mean, this is...
Yeah.
What if I drop it?
The steel must be part of your arm. Can you drop part of your arm? No.
And the fact that he sees a need for it for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and we kind of skipped over that scene where it was after the breakfast, but where he goes to talk to Arya and mm-hmm. saying, you know, listen, you're mad at Sansa, but she's in this position that's different than yours, and she can't afford to openly go against Joffrey. She's going to have to marry him.
Why would you let him marry a horrible person?
And he has no answer to that.
Because I can't say no.
Yeah, and so, but it's, again, we got a lot of Winter is Coming stuff in this episode, you know, whether it was mm-hmm. old Nan's stories or, you know, Eamon and you know, them up at the wall saying, yep, listen, we need help. You know, this is not going to be good. And then Ned talking to Arya and just saying, listen, you know, we've got problems ahead and we can't afford to be fighting within our own family.
Yeah. That was a great scene too. Really captured something from the books, but also I love how he explained the deal with Sansa to her. I actually think that had it been done like that in the book, it might have been a little easier to accept some of Sansa's behavior. Because as a reader, I was hating on Sansa. You know, well, book one, I'm hating on Sansa.
We're going to need a little bit of work from the show, I think, in terms of, I think the last place we left Sansa in terms of Joffrey was her being horrified to hear that they're going to kill a lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
And so to get where the story is going with that, they've got a little bit of work to do, I think, there, because we haven't sort of what we've seen since then is Joffrey asking Cersei's like, do I really have to marry her?
Yeah.
And so to get that sort of character relationship back a little bit more in alignment with what the books have, there's going to, I mean, no spoilers directly, but you know, it's not going to stay the way it is. So they're going to need to do something there.
And if you'd rather fuck painted whores, you'll fuck painted whores.
Well, I really liked how Cersei said, you know, do something nice for her. Do I have to? Yes, you have to. And I thought that spoke volumes. And I also thought it was really neat that even though Ned got her a doll and she doesn't play with dolls, he was trying to kind of treat her nicely to make up for Lady.
Yeah. Well, at the same time that we can appreciate his motivations, though, it's like as much as, you know, we don't necessarily always like Sansa, part of which I think is to do with her just being a 14-year-old girl, right? I mean, come on. But at the same time, it's like we've got to say, Ned, it's just, again, it's his out-of-touch thing. It's like, a doll? Really?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he wants to do something nice, so his heart's in the right place, but at some point you have to say, like, listen, it's not quite enough to just want to do something good. You have to actually put some thought into like what's actually going to work here.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned the doll, really, because now I'm thinking, this is from the same father who didn't really believe his daughter wanted to learn about fighting and swords until he actually saw a real weapon in her hand. She'd given him plenty of signs, the shooting of the bow, wearing the helmet, you know, not running around, acting crazy. But it's not until he actually sees that not only does she have a sword, but he realizes, if I take this away, she's just going to get another one, that he actually realizes, okay, she doesn't want to be a lady, even though I keep telling her she has to be. So you're right. He's a bit out of touch.
Well, and I think that that's fitting because he was the Lord and he was handling the running of his realm and all of that stuff. And it was the wife and it was Nan and it was, you know, everybody else that managed the children. It's also fitting
of fathers, of daughters of that age. I mean,
but also the fact that Sansa was raised to be like this. Yeah. She, you know, she's not any different than what they've made her become throughout her learning and growing. They taught her to be a little seamstress and she sits there and she does the sewing and she has the manners and she has the grooming and the etiquette and all of that stuff, just like she's supposed to. And we don't have any depth beyond that yet because I don't know that she really has any. All she has is the little fantasies of being a princess, being a queen someday. And it's happening, but it's not happening in the way that a little girl would dream of it. So I think she's really floundering between the way she was raised and expected to behave and what is really coming up for her and what she's seeing her prince to really be and not being able to reconcile it.
Yeah.
Plus hormones.
Oh, God.
Hormones.
Teenage hormones.
Well, I can say that growing up, again, in a large family with lots of women, my dad didn't understand any of us at those ages. He thought we all wanted to play with dolls when we were 16 and, you know, all of those things. And I just think that also that it's very real, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that any father really, because there's this weird stage where the kid's like half a girl, half a grown up. And no matter which way you try to address them, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I feel like the relationships are very real.
Well, no, so I definitely, PG. I believe it. I just the PG's way.
Thanks, Chooch. Yeah. Just what I want to hear.
The way I look at it is, it's not that I find the relationship in any way unbelievable. I just think it's a trait of Ned's character.
Oh, totally.
He's a little out of touch. That's all.
Absolutely.
But we should also maybe just talk a little bit about the parenting skills of Cersei. That in terms of I'm a little serious about this, yeah. In the sense of first of all, making it clear to Joffrey is like, listen, you know, there are some responsibilities here that I'm just going to have to put my foot down and say, yes, you do have to marry her. Yes, you need to go do something nice for her. But at the same time, she also says, you know, like he's resisting. He says, well, how would you handle it? And then she just sort of, he has stupid ideas because he's a kid and a little bit of a twit. But she just sort of calmly explains, well, here's why we don't do that.
Yeah. Well, they're not all stupid ideas. I have to say his idea of an army is not a stupid idea.
Hmm.
But perhaps the idea that people would fight for him just because he's the king.
Everything
is a stupid idea.
That's stupid. Yeah.
And I think it shows something that we'll see in later books, how Cersei really has a mind for the way that the, quote, Game of Thrones works how to win
She's
at it.
She's a political villain. She's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any random thoughts since we've pretty much reached the end of the episode there?
Khal Drogo speaks.
Yes,
Khal
that
Drogo
is true.
Speaks. That was a sweet scene. We didn't talk about Dany getting felt up.
Mm-hmm. Felt up. Oh, yeah.
Or
did that count as sex? No. But she did get felt up.
I don't know. Wait, the test is Chooch. Did it move?
No.
All right. I didn't.
So she gets felt up and the chick says, you haven't bled. Of course, we got to talk about people bleeding again.
And I was going to say, that's why it didn't move, because you went right from the feeling up to, have you bled for like, 2 moons?
Like, hand on boob, you bleeding? Yeah, not sexy.
And then she goes and she tells Jergo and Jorah that she's pregnant. And I love the little interaction. She's like, you know, kill a rabbit. Do you see any rabbits? Well, then kill a duck. Do you see any ducks? There are plenty of dogs. She doesn't want to eat dog.
Yeah.
It was just really funny.
Well, here's something, though, that I think they're hinting at way earlier than in the books,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, Jorah says, she's pregnant? I need to, you know, run off to that other city for a little while. I'll catch up with you guys. Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah,
I'm going to just leave right away, right now, right after we hear this important news.
That was a little obvious, that something is going on there.
I didn't think that he was that obvious either. I mean, when Robert and Ned are talking, I think when they're out in the woods or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We
know they've received
the
reports,
book.
But
Well, in the book,
I don't know where
they
came from.
Right. In the show, we don't know. But in the book, he actually says that, you know, he wants to,
he wants to
find his way back into the fold. But, you know, I guess when I read it, I read
I'm
it.
Trying
again
think, I'm trying to think. When they talk about it after they find out she's pregnant. But yeah. Well, they do talk about how he would like to get his lands back.
Yeah, I don't remember. Well, gosh, I don't know how much of this is spoiler since it was just sort of dramatically implied in the show, but I don't remember knowing that he, you know, was doing that reporting on her until like way.
I didn't believe he was in the first few books either, Christiana. I actually believe that it was Varys finding out all the information.
It was what they did in the book anyway was that first scene where they first talk about Dany and Viserys.
Mm-hmm.
Robert mentions Jorah.
Yeah,
specifically.
And says that she'll be spreading.
But then they don't say anything else, and so after a while, you sort of are sitting here saying, "Well, is Jorah? You know, he's obviously." Following Dany because, you know, he's there and I'm not going to jump ahead, but, you know, he's always around. He's definitely cares for her and sees her growing as a person. But then there's always that thing in the back of your mind. Well, is he actually reporting to Robert everything or not? And then, goes from there.
I don't think it was obvious. They had that scene early in the book, but I, as a reader, even reading it the second time, I didn't have that in the forefront of my mind for him.
Yeah.
So it did seem, you know, it was to me definitely out of place when he said, "Oh, gee, I got to go run this errand. And it's totally unrelated to the news of the pregnancy, of course, but I'll be right back." It was just kind of very odd and obvious. And you'd think he'd be a little sneakier, but he is a man.
He did get caught.
Yeah. So, yep. But I did. I'm gonna gush a little more because the only time about the I'm gonna gush about the last scene with Siri and Arya, because it was like one of the only scenes, one of the very, very, very few scenes where you see people actually really happy. And I think that Sirio really made that scene, because in the book you really get the sense that this isn't swordplay like what we've seen in the yard with all the men and the training and all that stuff. This is it's a dance, and it's very choreographed. It's very beautiful the way that they do it in the book. And I think that they really portrayed it here, and she found so much joy in it. It was exactly the kind of training that she needed, as opposed to the, you know, the hacking, slashing, you know, throwing your body against your opponent stuff that her brothers were learning.
I loved the whole dead part.
It was very dead.
Her smile just kept getting bigger and bigger as they went. It was really good.
So there's my squee.
Oh, I was totally swooning. I could watch that scene a million times probably. It was so awesome.
Yeah. Agreed.
But he's preparing a behind the wall drinking game. I think spoilers definitely ought to be in there.
The word spoiler.
Every time we say spoiler.
I know.
There you go.
Yeah.
We're being cautious, but some of it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Speaking of drinking, I think my poll suggestion was kind of a bust for this episode.
Yeah, we didn't have much fun. Yeah. Of course, it took me so long to edit episode 2. It didn't get out till Saturday, and in that episode, we said that, you know, we were going to have a poll that people could vote on, but hopefully this time we will definitely have a poll out this week that people can come over and vote themselves and get in on. But our poll that we ended up doing, this is Viv's baby again, so why don't you tell us what it was and where we all failed.
Well, the poll was, as we discussed in the last episode, if folks have had a chance to hear it, hopefully they've listened to it before they listen to this one, was underage drinking, which broke down in the back and forth as swallows. So how many swallows of, you know, minors underage drinking occurred. And then deaths again, because, you know, there's a lot of death in this book. And so Chooch voted 12 swallows and 2 deaths. I voted 5 swallows and 2 deaths. Christiana had 6 swallows and 2 deaths. PG had 3 swallows and 10 deaths. And Nutty had 0 swallows and half a death, which I think we're going to need a ruling on at some point. And we all lost because there was 0 swallows, 0 deaths. But I do think we should, I do want to specify for myself at least, I'm going into this, I'm not looking at the book until after the episode airs, which I send myself an email saying, this is my vote before the show starts, just like you guys email me. I email myself to keep honest.
I just finished the book again this weekend. So
Well, what I'm saying is, though, but I'm not checking the book before, you know.
Here's the next three chapters.
I didn't do that either. I was just in my head trying to think, where do I think they're going to get to? And then I make my decision.
See, I'm not even doing that. I'm like, just kind of like randomly. But I don't, I don't care if anybody else is like, obviously everybody else is going to be like, well, what's coming up, you know? But, you know, as long as we're being honor system, not checking the book to see, you know, who the big characters are that may be swallowing or maybe dying. but yeah, we all lost.
Yeah. If we come up with a different category, we might be able to do something for next week, but we'll figure that out.
What would half a death have been?
Yeah, I gotta say, somebody's either dead or they're alive. I don't
Someone
know
who any... receives was, a mortal wound and probably Princess, will die, but has not died yet.
Maybe unless it was Princess Bride, where they're mostly dead.
Mostly dead. So I can understand like the half a sex scene because there's a lot of ways to make that happen. But as for the death, I think that they would either be alive or dead. So we might want to think about that for future. Does anybody agree with me or do you disagree with me? Just so that we can have clarity on future polls.
Sure. I'm sorry, I missed all of that because I was dropped for like 30 seconds.
Oh, no.
I was just wondering what your definition of half a death would be.
Oh, discussing assassination.
Oh, that's not a death.
Just discussing it?
Yeah. Or rather, making plans to have somebody killed and possibly off screen.
Well, then there's
I don't know.
Because there's more death machinations.
How about
I agree. This is a black or white issue.
I think, yeah, what I was saying
when
you were
off screen death. I could see that.
Well, I would say off screen death only if it's a major, like an actual character. I mean,
I think just discussing it doesn't count though, because the plan could always go awry.
Yeah, and we counted the butcher's boy, which was off screen, and technically Lady Death was off screen. That's true. but I mean, you know, I think, and we can always vote on these as we go. But I think half a death leads to a lot of confusion. It definitely confused me when I got your email. I was like, death, he's either dead or alive. What the frack? But I think maybe for future polls, let's take a vote right now and say if we say. Half a, you know, we just need to be in like full numbers.
All right, black or white.
See, he's only mostly dead.
Yes.
I have to say, by the way, and this goes back to last week's episode, I am a little bit thinking back more. I'm a little bit perturbed that more emphasis wasn't placed on the butcher's boy, but
really,
I mean, not too upset. I don't know. I just feel like it was very breezed by. I don't feel like there was full impact. Whereas in the books, the butcher thought he was given a slaughtered pig because they had to hand him the boy in a sack. That's how mutilated he was.
Right.
Whereas in this, he was slung for a horse.
But in, I totally agree.
Episodes. Like I said, I wasn't upset over it. It's just the more I think about it, the more I feel bad that the butcher's boy didn't get much light. That's all.
I mean, I think the main point was you know, getting the dog, the hound, his line, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he ran not very fast. That was, you know, to push his character out there was you know, the point of that. So that was good.
And if we're going to do retrospect, then I'm going to say that I'm really even more annoyed than last week that they didn't show Ghost in the line going to the wall.
Yeah.
So there, well, I don't care how much it would cost.
This week either.
I don't care how much it would have cost to have a couple of handlers there and the ghost and the wolf there. They should have had that goddamn dog. They should have had that goddamn wolf on the line where he was supposed to be. At John's side, period. I don't care if it costs another $1.50 on their $50 billion show. They should.
I agree.
Done
I was also thinking like he was going up to the top of the wall for the first time and Ghost wasn't with him at his side. And I was just like, what? No, Ghost is with you guys side all the time.
Yeah, spend an extra couple bucks and get a dude up there with, you know, a meat in his pocket and let's get the damn wolf in the scene. So there. Better there.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I'm not, I guess, annoyed by it exactly, but I agree that I feel like at some point Wolf needs to be there unless they're just going to, like, leave him out altogether. Right.
And it's not like it takes up any more screen time because he can just be there in the background next to John. It's not adding a scene.
At this point, if he shows up, the people who don't know the books are going to like, whoa, wait, the wolf's there? What's going on? That's what it's going to feel like at this point.
Last time I saw that wolf, he was tiny.
And on a totally, completely random tangent, because I know we've got feedback, but on a random tangent, I was looking at the Game of Thrones, you know, the like thing, the page in Facebook, and they posted, you know, what was the favorite quote of Ned's? And so people, you know, there were like a billion responses and I was just kind of skimming it. And of course, most of them is, you know, winter is coming and, you know, the king eats and the hand shits. And there was one that just cracked me up and it was one does not simply walk into Mordor. Oh, wait.
That's awesome.
Yeah, totally random. Sorry, but yeah.
So you're talking about feedback. I put out word on Twitter, and we had a response from Nobilis. He asked, and one's a easy answer, which was, do you think there was more sex and violence in episode 1 than in 2 and 3 on purpose, or was that just the way the scripts fell? And we can say pretty much that, yeah, it's, you know, pretty much how the book is. Lots of stuff up front, and you know, now we're building the plot and building the story and stuff. So that's why that is. He also asked, do you think they're making excuses to have a booby shot or two in each episode? And my answer to that would be, I hope so. once you get to King's Landing and the high class brothels owned by Peter. You're gonna have some boobies.
Pretty good looking whores, by the way.
Yeah. I like Catelyn's. I love that. You know, when the two walk in and Peter's just like, go away. You're ruining my moment with Catelyn. Go.
My and as far as good looking whores, I mean, guys. Peter's got the money. You think he's going for the bargain horse? No.
Yeah. No. We also did have...
Going for the clever girl.
Yeah, he doesn't want the smart girl with the great sense of humor. He wants the girl with the major bazongas.
But so I have to say that Game of Thrones has done a lot less of adding nudity and sex for nudity and sex sake.
I agree.
Like True Blood adds so much more than is actually in the books. And I actually feel like... I don't know. I feel like it's much more natural in Game of Thrones, possibly or mostly because that's how the books are written. Like you just kind of expect it. Was that the last on Twitter?
That was all that I had from Twitter.
I got one on Twitter.
Okay.
Okay. Because I know that different people follow us. So I was like, oh, you know what? I'll put it out there too.
Exactly.
You know, in case people aren't following PG.
No,
and
do.
B.A. Matthews asks, it was a great episode, but I don't recall them making Arya brilliant with Needle in the books. Your thoughts on why the change? Now, I have to disagree. I kind of think that they did make her brilliant with Needle, but it took a lot longer. And I think that they're just condensing it down for screen's sake.
Well, I mean, I don't think they're making her...
I think she's not brilliant with Needle at all yet.
Yeah, they're not making her brilliant at all yet, so...
Well, she's not there yet, but she's getting there, you know?
She's very eager, which is different. And they already showed that she had, well, in the first episode, they showed that she has a natural inclination towards this stuff with the archery. When Bran was practicing archery and she went thoop, right in the middle.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. So, and I do think that she needs to become brilliant.
I'm just confused by the question because I feel like at this point in the show, we saw her playing around with
a wooden
sticks
sword.
With Micah. Right. Not doing anything that any other kid couldn't do.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I feel like she's not brilliant with Needle yet.
Yeah.
All we've seen is like we see, you know, John having to tell her to be careful with it, Ned having to almost take it away from her, and then her getting her first sword lesson. Where is she brilliant yet?
Well, I think possibly it's just because in that one lesson she seems to learn quickly because she can't even catch it in the beginning and then halfway through she catches it. And that's my thought on where that might be coming from. But I think it may be
her eagerness being disguised as or being misinterpreted as brilliance. I got an email to an email feedback, and this is from Patman23 on Twitter, who actually was a listener of ours from the COH podcast.
Awesome.
And big interaction with him on that podcast. And so he actually just went ahead and emailed me his comments. He says, and by the way, just in case you are having to seek out the episodes, there's an RSS feed for this podcast. You can go to the specficmedia.com site and there is a shiny button and it says BTW. And so clicky, clicky, and get your RSS feed going. There is an issue with iTunes, Chooch. Is that being worked out, or are you still fighting that?
I had intended to try it again earlier today, and I didn't get a chance to, but...
Because the server pooping on us?
Yeah. So it is not in iTunes yet. It may be, you know, hopefully will be very soon.
Well, it, but you guys can get my email about that?
But you can, but put the actual feed into iTunes and it works.
That's what I was going
to
say.
That's what he's getting to. That's what he was about to say.
Sorry.
That's cool.
But you guys got my email that there's another podcast called Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast, and they're already listed in iTunes.
Yeah, we saw that before.
No, there was
we were there first.
There was a Beyond the Wall. No. There was a Beyond the Wall podcast that was about
the Middle East.
The Middle East.
Yeah, but there's a Beyond the Wall podcast about Game of Thrones, and they started a week after we did.
Well, then they lose. They lose. Anyway, so working on the iTunes thing, and they can just, you know, rename theirs. So the feedback from Pat, though, is I listened to most of your episode one and will be hitting episode two for the drive home. Of course, I should listen to everything first before commenting and so on, but I can't wait. I'll send my usual and honest praise later on. Just wanted to comment on some things. In the opening credits, the fiery thing at the beginning is the sun over Westeros. I know Viv found it too steampunky, but to me it reminded me of the woodcuts of the medieval and early Renaissance view of that the Earth, Sun, and planets were rigidly fixed to a moving celestial mechanism.
Ooh.
Let me jump in real fast. On we have Verizon, and Verizon On Demand has a lot of HBO has a lot of content there, which I'm guessing is on the new HBO Go as well.
Which we haven't checked out yet.
Yeah. But there's some kind of making of documentaries in there, which I'm sure will be on the first DVD, is behind the scenes. And one of them was specifically about creating the title sequence and what their goals were and what. So, and the way they described it is that the Westeros is an inverse sphere. So it's like it's on the inside of a sphere.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A cyclical land. And in the center is an astrolathe, which is the burning sun thing.
Okay.
And which has nothing to do with the book or anything. Okay. It's just purely their concept of their map.
The TV show's concept or George's concept?
The special effects guys who did
it. Gotcha. Okay.
it's an astrolathe with an inverse sphere world. And they did say that it will change as the show progresses.
And it did this time. Mm-hmm. It went to Vaes Dothraki instead of being in the other Pentos.
And then
they did that last time for the second episode.
Yeah. So then.
And then Pat continues, the fat guy standing guard in Winterfell that PG observed looking like a LARPer and Nettie theorized was a fan who won a chance to be on the show is probably going to be Fat Tom from the first book. Martin actually describes a fair amount of heavyset men in the supporting cast, so I didn't think it out of place. And then he says, I'm looking... Huh?
I just said very good.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to episode 2 of the podcast this afternoon and episode 3 when it comes out. I watched last night's show, but I'll refrain from talking about it at the moment. But I enjoyed it. Pat. Thank you for the feedback, Pat.
That was all the feedback I got. We still haven't gotten a phone call. Somebody needs to call. So, you know, listen for the number.
Drunk dials.
Fine. We'll play anything. So,
yeah. Drunk dial. Play the drinking game where every time you hear the word spoiler, you take a shot and then call us and tell us what you thought of the show.
Absolutely.
I can't wait for next episode. I'm very excited to meet a few characters that are coming. And what I think is happening in next episode is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we definitely get some interesting characters coming up if what I think, I mean, what must be next is coming. So that'll be really cool.
Oh, and if you're all into spoilers, the character Twitter accounts have been hysterical lately. The Suddenly Sander and Lady Arya and some other characters that I don't want to say their names till you meet them in the show. just if you go and you just watch them, you could, there are a couple lists out there that you can just actually see them all at once, and you see them talking back and forth. It's hysterical. Prince Tommen was talking about how he was locked in a closet, and that's why nobody saw him. He claimed that Joffrey put him there.
Every time you say "Suddenly Sandor," I get the song from Little Shop of Horrors stuck in my head. Suddenly Sandor.
Kind of the point.
Well, I know, but it's like, okay, now I got to go listen to something because it'll run through my mind for hours.
Well, once again, thank you everybody for listening, and we look forward to Sunday. Like you said, we got a lot of good stuff coming up.
Yeah,
I think we'll have some deaths. What do you think, Viv? We are gonna have some swallows.
I think we'll have a few.
I think there will be a swallow or two for sure.
So thanks. Thanks for listening. And we will catch you next time on the original Beyond the Wall podcast.
The original. PG Blushin'. If you have feedback for the Beyond the Wall podcast, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 6199-BTW-GOT, which is 619-928-9468. You can also leave us a comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com, where you'll find a shiny BTW button that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.
Hello?
It is so far.
Hi, do I sound poopy?
Now you sound like the opposite of poopy.
Oh, cool.
You sound pee.
I found out this weekend that in French, to kind of say you have to go pee, the literal translation is I have to make a wish. So I've been saying that from now on.
Now where's PG? Dun, dun, dun.
Didn't he initiate the call?
He did. He
thought he did.
Maybe he went to make a wish.
If you're there, we can't hear you.
Maybe he muted.
He went to either make a wish or drop a deuce.
Everyone who isn't us is an enemy.
But here's the thing. We've been talking for 2 minutes and 45 seconds, and no one's dropped off.
Yes.
CPG says yes. I say yet. Can you tell who that pessimist and who the optimist is?
There's my ray of sunshine.
Yes.
Me, I'm a ray of sunshine.
I mean, I think the lines are going to be fun. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, what? Good. Yeah. Sure. Anyway, yeah.
Do you know the first thing about sword fighting?
Sticking with the pointy end.
That's the essence of it.
At least you sounded like you were blushing there.
Did I sound like I was blushing?
You sounded like you were blushing.
Because I was talking about swallowing?
I'm very picky about my dog.
Such good outtakes.
Oh, shit.
Why did you come here?
Well, we just wanted to see how the founding sweat hog lives. Hey, look, we can't stay long. We got a cab waiting downstairs.
You took a cab?
We're going to give it back.